Your tea talks are
Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
Well, you're listening to Aramarte Fio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. Good evening and welcome to Gather Round. I'm Rosanna Marthe Fio. And as you heard right at the beginning, it sounded like, okay, problems again, but no, I think that we're all set. So we've got Tea Talk with Monica Johnson with us. We've got Kevin Baird coming in, who is a psychic, and he's going to explain a bit about that to us. We've got Kira Soko, who just has her first book published. Then in our second hour, we've got Michael Custer talking about the government shutdown, and Sarit Jacobson is here with her eyes on Israel. So, full night. And we're going to start with Monique. Hello.
Hello, hello. This is Monique Johnson. So good to be here. Thank you, Roseanne, for the time.
My pleasure.
So today, we are going to our root chakra. We have been looking at different ways of balancing our energy centers, i.e. chakra. And in the talk that we have been doing, we've been going through the pairs or the corresponding chakras and going a little bit deep in those as to how they affect our lives and how we can do different things to increase the energy, to increase the awareness in them if they are a little dormant. So today, of course, the heart is the balancer. It's the fulcrum. And on the farthest ends, the chakras that are relating to the first and the seventh chakras, so the first one would be the root chakra, dealing with the earth, your survival. And then the seventh, its corresponding chakra, would be the crown chakra, which we will get into later. And remember, chakra is just energy centers. It's the portals by which we experience life in this physical existence. If we are energy beings, spiritual beings, having an earth or physical experience, then there has to be a way that it translates from being just energy to being in the finite world and having emotions and thoughts and things like this. And these chakras are just the translator. It's the portal. So the root chakra. So this is one that it is clogged by fear. It is one of the main chakras a lot of times that govern our lives until we finally start waking up to the essence of us, instead of just experiencing everything from the physical and mental and emotional world. So, as we look at different chakras, this would be the one that helps us to feel okay in the world. It's the one that, if you haven't really experienced a lot of stress and trauma in your life, in your childhood, and it didn't really rock the foundation by which you experience life, your security, then this chakra usually stays pretty balanced for people. But for anyone who's dealing with any kind of trauma, this is the one to go to. And we have been talking of chakras on how to balance, but if you are just now starting with the energy centers, starting to awaken to, oh, I'm more than this physical being, this is the one you want to concentrate on. This is the one you want to learn the most about first, because this is just getting you right. It's number one. It's the basis. So manifestations of a root chakra that is imbalanced, it will show, the person will have the shadows of fear cloud their eyes. And when they, when we look at something, when we have an opinion on something, when we are deciding right, wrong, good, bad, should, shouldn't, when we are deciding what step to take, if it is based in fear instead of love, it, this energy center is imbalanced. Okay? So, Ed, what do you do with an imbalanced energy center? You find ways to balance it. So never go into self-judgment. It's not about, oh, you know, beating up self because I got fear. We all got fear. How you balance fear is that each and every time it comes up in your life, that you address it and release it. And every time you release fear and not act from a place of fear, but see it dead on, understand where it's coming from, and act from a place of action instead of reaction, every time you do that, you're releasing the energy that would clog up this energy center, and you're balancing that energy, okay? So, and for a person to just kind of think about, I would like to see where I am on this, I'm not very sure, then think about when you're planning your day. Are you planning from a place of all things are possible or from a place of fear? What if that doesn't happen? If you're kind of a pessimistic person when it comes to life, it can maybe be traced back to fears. And there are all kinds of different fears. Some are physical. Some are just emotional fears, the inability to trust. The inability, first of all, people, the inability to trust those outside of self. And then the inability to trust self. Because when it comes home, when you're trying to empower yourself, you got to face the inability to trust self and trust the journey. So these are all the things that start to get involved with this energy center. And just to break it down and to be clear, find your fears, okay? Allow them to become clear to you what you are afraid of or where do you see fear come up in your life. And then your step one is just to see it clearly. See, where did it come from? You know, why do I have this fear? Why am I afraid to trust? Okay, because that's a deep one. Why am I afraid to trust? So the first step would be just understanding, I am afraid to trust. Then two, why am I afraid to trust? Where did it come from? Where did that grow from? And then that's when you're researching its origin. And then you just accept it. You accept that it's there. And when you can accept it from a place of love, most of the time you will find that it really dissipates because you are shining the light under the bed. Fear is the little dark corner under the bed, the boogeyman. And when you shine a light on it, it just dissipates. So most people find that at that point, it dissipates. And if it doesn't, then the next step would just be really perceive what is. You perceive the reality. Because fears are a reaction of the mind, usually for something that has yet to happen. Okay? So when you start to perceive reality, then you're kind of digging through that muck and you're shining a brighter light on it. And then you've got to give yourself the okay to let it go. Just open up, turn toward light, and let it go. And each time you start telling yourself a story that would take you from the letting go to the holding on place, you stop and you make a different choice. So that's kind of how to start relieving the fear. Start to dig the hands into that, you know, to loosen it up first because you can't just go from, oh, I'm dense with fear and boom, I have no fear. But what you're doing is loosening it up so that you can see it clearly and it begins to release. So that's our tea talk for today. This is Monique Johnson with HealthyMovementsInternational.com. We have a retreat coming up the third week in January. Please check our website for that. Slowly I'm getting information up on this because this is kind of a one-girl show. And I have help, though. I have a couple of girls that really help me out. So hope to see you soon. Thank you so much.
Well, I have a question, or actually more than a question. Happy birthday tomorrow.
Yes, thank you. My birthday is tomorrow. Yes, it's beautiful.
Yes. I thought it's like, wow, okay. Well, I hope you have wonderful big plans.
Yes, well, you know, every day is really a birthday, but, you know, tomorrow we're really going to, you know, I try to have a lot of love in my life all the time, and tomorrow we're just going to love it up even more.
Hey, that sounds wonderful. So, we'll do, and if anything really unusual happens or anything, make sure you let us know next week. Otherwise, just have your love fest, and we will be talking with you then. Next week.
Yes, until next week, have a beautiful day.
Thank you. Oh, did you
Bye-bye.
Say, yes, once more, yes, healthymovementsinternational.com. Yes. Okay. And now we have with us Kevin Baird. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, how are you, Ruth Ann?
Hey, I am great. Aren't we lucky here in the Northern Hemisphere where we are? It's so beautiful, this autumn weather.
Absolutely.
It's just great. I'm hoping that everybody in the SOHEM is having a lovely spring day, too, just like, oh, this has been excellent today. I love it. Kevin
Most
and I are
beautiful.
Both in Illinois, so we're even, that doesn't mean that we share the same weather, but today we're sharing the same weather. So,
yes.
You can be found at www.templeofgaia.com.
Yes.
And I wanted you to explain the word Gaia, because this is not necessarily, I mean, we do have pagan listeners, but it's not billed as a pagan show. So would you explain Gaia in the terms that we would, you know, everyone
sure.
could understand?
Gaia is just another name for Mother Nature, Mother Earth, all those different metaphorical names for the planet, the sphere, the bubble that we live in, basically. And it was part of the original name for the whole or single continent that used to exist on the planet before they broke up into the different continents, and was known as Pangaea or Pangaea, depending on how you pronounce it. So it had partial male with the pan part of it, and then partial female with the Gaia part of it. It was called Pangaea and Pangaea, and that there are magazines out there that are called Pangaea, and it's about...
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now, you have been... Then all of your life, you've been attuned to nature, should we say?
Yes. I guess you can say I was an ecologist before it was hip. Like when
okay.
I was 10. Before
yeah.
I was 10, I was having people bring me things that were about, you know, the woods and you know, elves and gnomes and trolls and witches and everything. And it's more just, I guess, it's sort of like the border line or the border or the border towns, I guess, where they exist between heaven and earth. So
right.
they could probably see ghosts better than we do. They can probably see souls better than we do or do it all. Some of us don't even or ever considered the concept of that. But I have, in my day, photographed these kinds of beings, and that's pretty much what my, you know, what drove me to be where I am today. Like, I've gone on a couple of campouts, took a couple of pictures, and then there just happened to be this person, but it was more in they were their regalia or their guise was more of like a wood, like a big walking stick, you know, the walking stick bugs that we see on the trees
yeah.
or whatever. Imagine one 4 feet tall.
Okay.
So, I know.
Yeah,
I've never got to talk to them, so it was just probably just some kind of photographic anomaly or whatever, but I've had so many of these phenomena show up, and my latest thing is one to where I've been pursuing what I call plaster scene, where, you know, it's like plaster Paris, the things that we use to put walls up and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But there are these things that occur on walls, like white blemishes and that kind of thing, that is sort of like a phenomenon. No one knows why they occur there. And I've discovered that it's a part of a, like an entity that's living in this area, and that's the way that they come and go in and out of a building or a structure, or if it's a big stone or something.
Okay, they're entryway. In fact, on your site, you have some pictures.
I do.
Of plaster bits. And
yes.
I really, really suggest people go to templeofgaia.com, because Kevin has a lot. He has a lot of his background and these bits of, well, it's like bits of art. But,
yes, yes. That's what I call it.
Yeah. So those are entryways then.
Yes. And there is this one that's sort of like the archetype that I have out of my bits of art, or, you know, like spirit phenomena, where I captured the image of a Spanish lady in the wall when I was visiting Chichen Itza in Mexico.
Wow.
And that she had long flowing black hair and a beautiful face, and I sort of helped, like, I have the original image there, and then I sort of superimposed one of my nieces into the image just to help people see the facial structure of the original image as well. It's sort of helpful.
Oh, technology. It's amazing. I wanted to ask, when did you decide that you were going to do psychic work for other people? I mean, you've always been tuned in yourself through your family and all, but what, mm-hmm. when did you decide that, wow, you know, I can really help others by...
I used to go to parties, and I would take my tarot deck with me, and people would say, oh, my God, that's happening. Like, how are you doing that kind of thing? I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. They're like, I'm not going to tell you the story, because it's very private, but I want you to know that you are right on with that. So I got inspired, and with people coming back as follow-ups about my message that I gave them as a part of the tarot reading, I just decided to go and approach one of the shops in Virginia, about 45 minutes outside of D.C., and I said, I'm a tarot reader, and I was wondering if you're looking for a tarot reader, and they said, you're hired, because they have never had a male tarot reader. So they're like, whatever you can do, we'll take.
Wow. Well.
Yep, and then 7 years later, the store had to close, but I was there for 7 years.
Wow, okay.
As a weekly tarot reader for them, and I got tons of experience, and that was back in the 90s, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So
the rest is, as they say, is history. Well, just to let you know, I, through those experiences with working with the different tarot images, like two cards would show up or three cards would show up, and it would create a specific image in my mind, what I call the mind media player, and it got to where those images kept repeating themselves, and I just decided to coin my own images. So I designed my own tarot deck, and it's really an oracle deck. It's not tarot. It doesn't follow the theme of the tarot, and I call it the Horizon Oracle.
Right.
And it has 111 images, and these are images of things that happen to everybody at least one time or another in a day, in a week, in a month, in a lifetime. And what I've done is that I have coined descriptions, answers, responses, and conditions that are related to each of these images, and these are images that I've hand-drawn myself. And they're basically cartoon scenes.
They're images that you yourself have drawn, or you had somebody draw?
No, I drew them.
Okay. I just didn't understand how you said that. Okay, that you have drawn yourself. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. I'm always like in awe of people who have or are multi-talented. You know, like okay, this is wonderful. You know, another Renaissance man. So that's great. But so you have, and I know that your partner on the radio show, Daniel Michaels, uses your deck.
Yes.
Also, because he has found that it is something that resonates with him.
Yes.
So I wonder if go ahead.
I consider myself the primary student of this Horizon Oracle, just because every time I do readings with it, I learn something new as I'm reading for clients, customers, and friends. And Daniel, since he's been following me, I consider him the secondary student of the Horizon Oracle.
Okay. All right. So, and mention him. Just mention your radio show, would you? And then I've got a couple of questions for the psychic.
Yeah, I do a show on Mondays called Walking on the Sidewalk. And what I do on that show is I give readings to people who call in, and I give them a heads up of the stuff they can expect to see over the next, you know, couple of weeks, 90 days, that kind of stuff. And I call it walking on the sidewalk because that's really what life is all about, is getting out there, walking on the sidewalk, maybe going into a shop, sitting down, having something to eat, finding, you know, a dollar on the ground. That's why I call it walking on the sidewalk.
Okay. No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And walking on the sidewalk, I mean, it has all kinds of visions because you're on your way to somewhere, you're coming from someplace else, it's just, and on the sidewalk, you're not right in the middle of the road. So, I mean, it has a lot of connotations. I like that. And that's right here on Blog Talk Radio every Monday, right?
Yep, about 8 o'clock Central.
8 Central. Yeah, I'm going to post that. So, you know, there's a lot of self-proclaimed psychics out there. And I know that you probably get tired of being asked about them, but so I'll ask again. Give me a percentage, if you can, a ballpark percentage of the people who bill themselves as psychics who may be not so good at it, or maybe not so credible, not so ethical?
Sure. I would say compare it to them that you're talking about as like McDonald's that are out there, and that they serve the millions. And then there's the bonefish restaurants and high-end restaurants that sell, you know, pure beef hamburgers as well, and they're of a higher quality because they specialize in that. So if you want that higher quality burger, then you're going to pay that higher price. And the thing is, the low end...
I would just like to use the tablecloth since I'm a vegan and the meat reference sort of turns me off, but you say McDonald's as opposed to white tablecloth restaurants?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Yeah.
There you go.
I think you're right, though. I think there's a lot of people. And because I've known several people who, whether they were just readers of tarot or psychic readings, they say one little thing. And because I've had people say, oh, they're so good, they said this and this. And it's like, my God, you can say that about anybody, and it's going to be true at some time in their life. You've had a great deal of pain. Well, my God. You know, hasn't everybody? I mean, there, you know, such broad statements. And so it's like, okay, I know that there's a lot. And some of the people actually aren't doing it. I mean, some don't really realize that they're just picking up a couple signs here and there, which is a good thing to do. But a true psychic like you are getting a lot more. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
My abilities go so far as to where I'm able to, as a medium, that's someone who can talk to the dead, if you will.
Right.
I can hear foreign languages, words spoken to me that I can articulate to the client that's in front of me, and then they will translate it in English so I understand what I just said.
Right. Right.
And that's known as xenoglossy.
Okay, xenoglossy. So, I mean, we're talking with Kevin Baird here, who really, once you go to him or talk with him, you do readings on the phone.
I do.
Don't you? And, you know, then he's going to ruin you, you know, quote unquote, ruin you for your psychic down the street. Let me put it that way, because you're going to find things out in detail through Kevin that the person down there out at the market, whatever, who's set up, you know, I mean, that you probably aren't going to go to them anymore. Let's just put it that way, because it's there again once you have the real thing. So you do readings on the phone.
Right.
And you can be contacted through your website.
That's right.
And then also, you do, you're still reading, do you do psychic fairs or like pagan pride days or?
I do, but I'm in the middle of writing a book, so I'm focused on that, so I'm not really out in the public too much. I take client calls here in the office locally, but I am not out in the world right now, but as soon as I get my book published here, and it's the companion to go along with the Horizon Oracle deck, I'm selling them also, by the way, too.
I was going to ask,
So that's what I'm in the middle of doing in that sense. I'd also like to add just real quick that there are some people who would say to me all the time, oh, if you're so psychic, why don't you contact me? And then I would say, well, what am I doing right now?
Ah.
And then they sort of like, oh, well, that doesn't count. I'm like, it doesn't? And then I also say, well, there are people who are supposed to work with psychics, and then there are other people who don't work with psychics, and it's usually those people who influence the lives of the people who need to see psychics. So there are some people on the planet right now who are here to have a great influence over the world, and most of these influences come from strife in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they seek out psychics. And then there are other people who have perfect lives, that they don't have any strife, and that they just go around and they're rude to people and they're horrible to people, and people wonder why nothing bad ever happens to, you know, bad people. And that's because they're teaching other people how not to be and where not to be, kind of thing. So
right.
There are
and
two.
They're setting examples of the way not to live, basically.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense. Have you ever dealt with, have you ever been closed down? Like you worked in a store for 7 years and they closed, but it had nothing to do with you doing readings or anything.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've worked at a few stores when I was in D.C. They closed down just because of the economy was really bad.
Right. Okay. Because I know that there's been some shops that have closed because they just did readings, and the different regulations in the town or some of the town people didn't like, and you know that this has been in the past. I don't know if anything's happened recently, but you've never been persecuted in any way for what you do.
Not so far, knock on wood.
Yeah.
But I'm honest in the information that I give. I give people a heads up of the stuff they can expect to see. I'm not going to tell them that this is going to happen or that's going to happen or that your husband's going to cheat on you or whatever.
Yeah.
Or your wife. I just basically say, okay, you're worried about this. I use my information to help them learn from the experience and either how they can improve on it or move on from it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, and that in lots of ways, you keep people from being blindsided.
Yes.
which is...
I was that way when I was in the Army, when I was in basic training and with the 101st Infantry and Airborne, I would go on maneuvers with my team, and we would always win. And we got to the point to where they called me Lucky or the Rabbit's Foot or whatever, and it got to where they wouldn't send me out on those maneuvers anymore because they thought that I had an in with somebody that was, you know, upper sergeant thing or whatever. And and
okay.
so no one would get in trouble. They just reassigned me to a place that didn't require that.
Okay.
Yeah. So after my tour in the 101st was done, it was the 3-year tour, and then the next 3-year tour, I got transferred up to D.C., and I got connected to the institute that the movie The Men Who Stare at Goats was written about.
Oh.
Have you seen that?
I have not seen it. I've heard about it, but no, I have not seen it.
Yeah, the guy who shot himself in the quad at the school, I don't remember that being a part of the story. I don't think he shot himself, but my sergeants asked me to go and get his car and drive it home. So I was very much in that world, and that I had psychic abilities. They recognized that I had psychic abilities and that they were getting ready to send me to the institute until this other soldier had that situation that got newspaper attention, and it ended up shutting down the contract or the project.
Okay. It's too bad that some of these projects that can be used for the good are so much at the mercy of the media.
Yeah. People who are listening, you can Google Albert Stubblebein, Stubblebine, Albert Stubblebine, and just Google him to see that project. And he was the leading commander that I worked under when I was back in that day.
Okay, Albert Stubblebine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Stubble. Yeah.
B-I-N-E. Mm-hmm. So, wow. So you've had some interesting and varied experiences as a psychic. I mean, besides just reading for people and all, you've had some other things. But what do you see happening with you, say, in 5 years, Kevin? Now, you're writing the book that is a companion to the Oracle deck, I mean, the Horizon Oracle deck. And when do you expect that to be finished?
In, like, the next 6 months or less.
Okay.
My plan, there's two angles to this. And one is that a collegiate side, that they will take the mystery out of it a little bit and turn it into a tool that can be used for people who are socially challenged. Because they will present these images to the patient and ask them to write a story about what it is that they see. And that will turn into a tool eventually that psychiatry can use.
Okay. Wow. So.
But that's
so,
that's way down the road.
Yeah, but it's got some different paths off of it that you're working on, you're thinking about. And once you start thinking about it, things start happening. So that's excellent. So we should be able
well,
to
that's why I'm here in Carbondale, SIU area, because I have some ends there. So once I'm finished, I'm going to go ahead and approach a couple of professors that I know, and that we're going to work on that polished part of it as well. So I got the pagan side, and then I got the muggle side, if you will, taking a word from Harry Potter.
Right. Yeah. No, that's excellent. And Carbondale, well, you know, anytime you're in a town or city that has a university, it seems like you're way ahead of things. I love the university towns. So, unfortunately, I don't happen to live in one at this moment, but I think they are great. Before we let you go, are you involved in a working group right now in Murfreesboro?
I am at the Gaia House in Carbondale.
Okay.
And it's the Southern Illinois Pagans Alliance, CPA.
Right.
S-I-P-A.
That group's been around for quite a while.
Yep.
Yes, because I remember, I think they used to come up to Pagan Pride days in, not Pagan Pride, Pagan Picnic in St. Louis. And,
yes.
Things like that. So, okay. Yeah. So you're with them. I see. Okay. Yeah. It's a pretty active, it was a very active group. I'm assuming it still is.
Yep. They still have get-togethers once a month.
Right. So, well, are you doing anything special for Samhain? Because, I mean, of all times of the year, when the veil is the thinnest, this is it.
I know. I do not have anything significant planned.
Okay.
So, maybe go and have a beer with somebody, but that's about it.
There you go. Will you have more clients at this point?
Will I have more?
Yeah. Do you get a few more calls during this time of year, during Samhain?
No. I get more calls right before school starts, right before summer vacation starts.
Ah.
And also the new year.
Okay. So I'm sort of surprised that there's not, but I think, I mean, things change. But it seems like there would be more going on, you know, in your business
yes.
At this time. But did you ever or do you now do things at the like at parties? Now you're not, but did you ever do the what I want to say. The Halloween parties, that kind of thing.
Yes. That was my favorite thing to do, not go to a Halloween party and just get, you know, plastered. Mine was always fun, you know, giving readings. So I would go and hire myself out for Halloween parties.
Right.
Back when I was in D.C. And back
right.
in the heyday, there was one client who, you know, was a banker, and that he had elite people coming to his parties, and I was giving them readings that blew them out of the water. They're like, oh my God,
cool.
You guys are real.
Well, I hope you were reimbursed appropriately.
Yeah, bye. It was good. It was $2.50 an hour, and I would work 4 hours, so that was good.
That was a nice chunk there, yeah.
Yeah.
We've been speaking with Kevin Baird from www.templeofgaia.com. And, Kevin, thank you so much. And be seeing you on
just
the
one
other
more thing. Yeah. Just one more thing. They can Google me by just Googling psychic medium Kevin Baird. You'll find all kinds of stuff out about me doing that.
Okay. All right. That's the way then. So we can see more things that you've done and are involved in. So, excellent.
Yeah, because I've been interviewed by, you know, other magazines, newspapers, radio shows, blog talk shows.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and Monday night, and I will post it, Monday night, your show on the on Blog Talk Radio.
Yes. Main Street Universe is the network, and my show is Walking on the Sidewalk.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, Kevin.
Bye now.
Well, that was Kevin Baird. And now we've got Kira Sokol. And Kira, I'm so sorry. You had such a problem getting in.
It's all right. My phone wasn't connecting for some reason, but I'm here now. So
here now? Okay.
Yep.
Well,
Thank you for having me on. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I'm so glad, and this is a completely different hat you're wearing tonight, because we've talked other times about your role as an activist, And tonight we're going right into your author hat.
Yep, it's a very different hat, but it's been with me as long as wanting to be an activist has been. I've been writing ever since I was a kid and decided to do something with it and had a book that I kept finding myself going back to and writing more about and showed it to a friend and she said, oh my gosh, I love it. And I hooked up with a publisher and next thing you knew, it was coming in the mail, all published and polished up.
Well, your website is www.kira, that's KiraStoyko.com, and it tells about your book, which is called From the Woods, The Onyx.
And I put that little onyx part because I'm hoping for there to be at least a sequel, if not one or two
and
more books.
That's what I figured, that you had something else in mind. the story, though, I mean, the young woman, you draw on your own experience living in Virginia in the D.C. area and being a horse person. There's a lot of you in this, I believe.
Yes, there is.
Right.
I always felt easiest to write about, you know, drawing on my own personal experiences and emotions. And this was the first sci-fi, or really not true fiction, book that I ever went into. So I never saw myself publishing in this way. And when I was thinking about coming on your program, I was trying to put words to the feeling, and it really came down to, I think in the sci-fi genre, when you really have to make things up and these characters are facing these absolutely fantastical situations where you have to make sometimes even really irrational decisions, but even to survive. And I think I really got to play around with the whole spectrum of human emotion. And, you know, we get all these social norms about, you know, this kind of situation happens, you know, maybe a loss or even a great triumph, and you're supposed to react a certain way, and people will judge you on how you act. Is it too much? Is it too little? Well, suddenly there's monsters and you're on the brink of death and no one can tell you what the right or wrong way to react to that should be. So it can go anywhere, and that brings a lot of reality to it, which I really enjoyed working with.
Yeah, well, now you said that this particular book, Into the Woods, you had started, pieces of it, not thinking about a book, but just some of your writings years ago. Am I right?
Right. Yes, it actually was a dream, or rather a nightmare, I had years ago. And throughout my years, I've always just written stories either from a dream or just a weird daydream or whatever, and this one I kept going back to, and you know, I would think of another character that I thought, wow, that would be really cool to have this quirky person, or you know, gee, I wonder how Dakota, my protagonist, you know, would react if this happened or that. And I kept adding to it and going back to it, and one day really sat down and thought, I've always wanted to publish and I've always wanted to, you know, finish something off. And it was at a time in my life I was finishing up university and doing a lot of activism, and I thought, you know, this would be a really great thing to do kind of for me, and then just bringing in characters that I kind of borrowed from other books to make this more full, and it just became so fun. And then a friend of mine who I'm living with now, she read it with me, and a girl I knew from school, I ended up posing for the cover with her horse, and then another friend of mine did the cover work. So it's actually a photograph that was through different photo software made to look more like a painting, because as a sci-fi book, I thought it probably should just have a photograph for the cover. So everything really fell into place.
Oh, that's so cool so it's actually you.
Yes. Or no, it's a friend of mine, Katrina, who riding her horse. On the cover, and I believe her horse is named Montana, and the main character of the book's name is Dakota. So we kind of had a laugh that the name of the horse in reality and the name of the main character in the book are both named after states.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so you've got 48 more states to go. That's 24 books if you need to do two. Yeah, okay, that's going to work. No, it's like, I just think it's very nice that you had friends that were helping you with the cover and everything. That's excellent. But now, I know you know about horses, but the book starts out with a fox hunt.
Yeah.
Have you ever been on a fox hunt?
I haven't, but
thank God.
But even fully from my experiences when I was growing up and when I first started riding horses, a good friend of mine, her father was very into, they would go on fox hunts. I don't think very often they would actually find a fox or anything, but getting dressed into that, you know, regalia, and it was very proper, and then raised, and it was just very interesting to see all these, you know, grown men come to get kind of like a war reenactment or something.
Right. Well, they sort of they get to dress up and they do all this. And, I mean, unfortunately, sometimes there was, you know, other things.
Right.
But when you get your characters in the woods, because this is called From the Woods, and they run into something, or something runs into them. And so that's when you can really use your imagination. Would this be a like a psychological horror kind of book, or just straight sci-fi, or what do you think?
It really is more of a psychological horror type thing, because it's written in first person, so you're inside Dakota's head during the book. And I can't remember my exact words before, but how I phrased it, but it's a very real person reacting as any real or rational person would to something paranormal or not something that shouldn't exist. And so I wanted to keep that, you know, anchored into reality of someone thinking, you know, oh my gosh, I'm a real regular person and I don't believe in any of this, but it's happening before my eyes. So that's what I really, you know, but it keeps that real world anchor. And then she, Dakota, and the one other character, Lawrence, who are kind of two lost souls that find each other. She's stranded after the woods, you know, this fox hunt, and really has nowhere to go. And he, police officer who was helping to find these people, and they're kind of helping each other out afterwards, and they're really the only true witnesses to any of these, you know, attacks or sightings of these kind of humanistic beings they run into in the woods, kind of a clash of almost two realms or parallel universes, as I get more into it in the book. So that adds another layer that it's not the whole world exposed to this, but just these two characters.
Yeah. Well, and now you mentioned one is the police officer, and I know that you, in your personal life, again, you're drawing on that because you work with firemen or firefighters and police officers doing EMT work. So you have a lot of experience in how they might react to certain things. So you're bringing, there's a lot of you. I don't know if you've discovered anything strange, like you're talking in the woods or not, but I mean, there's a lot of Kyra in this book. So now you say, you hope that this is the beginning of at least a trilogy. We have to ask, is there going to be romance with the policeman?
No, it's a very, more like a father-daughter type relationship.
Okay.
I thought of that in the beginning, but as I fleshed the book out. They just are really each other's best friend so much, and he really takes care of her kind of in her time of need, and then he runs into some problems, and she then gets the caregiver role. So adding a romantic tie would have just felt very wrong.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just not right, yeah. Because, well, and then in future books, I mean, she can meet somebody, and the policeman cannot like them, and, you know, until they prove themselves, and, you know, like the father-daughter thing, like you said. So,
Definitely.
Yeah.
It opened a lot more doors.
I like that. Well, how after you decided, okay, I've got a book, or after your friend told you, how long did it take you to actually get it in print?
Well, as far as in print, I found a really great, I self-published with this book and found a really great publishing company called Libris, L-I-B-R-I-S, and they are really great walking you through the process and then also providing a lot of the marketing tools. So I'm working with that right now as far as being able to do a book show or doing signings at bookstores. And you can get it on Barnes & Noble or Amazon or Libris's website. And it's also on e-book, which is really great. And that's what a lot of people are going for these days. So once I talked to them and submitted some of the, you know, the first couple chapters and then kind of where the story was going to go, and we agreed on everything. And but then it came into putting it back on me to polish it up and put it all together and have all the grammar right and yet all of the storyline in its entirety, which took probably another 2 or 3 months I didn't intend to take.
Yeah.
But then once all that was done and it went to copy editing, it was really just maybe a month that it showed up on my doorstep, and it was just such a surreal and amazing experience. And it's also, as you mentioned, there's a lot of me in it, but I always think of my life kind of in a book anyway and the people I meet, but it's almost like, wow, this is a great person. They would make such a great character. You know, so a lot of the characters in the book are also people I know or people I've met along the way of my life and put them in there. So that's fun, too, kind of preserving people I've met in my book and my other stories and, you know, having them in there.
That had to be great. When the first book arrived, that just had to be a great feeling. It's like, wow, And like you said, ebooks are good, and a lot of people are going to ebooks. They're cheaper and everything. But I mean, I'm one of those people. I like to have a book in my hand.
Me too.
I like the way they look, the way they feel, the way they smell, the whole.
Yeah.
I like books. If you could see my house, you would understand that too. Yeah. It's, I really like that hands-on thingy, and you know, I like to. Mine are not pristine, let's put it that way. You know, they're dog-eared and they're written in and everything because I enjoy them, so that's good. But now I know that you did publish some poems before this book.
Yes, and that was also kind of by the seat of my pants. I found a flyer, I think it was, that there was a poetry contest, and I had just written poetry, and I've also written stories and everything in the book, so thought, the heck with it, and I sent up, it ended up being 2 poems in 2 different volumes of, I think it's the Poetry Society of America, and they publish a book every year. So I submitted the poem in, and then a couple weeks later they came back and said, you know, proofread it, we're going to publish it. And I went, oh, wow, I really didn't expect that to happen.
Okay. So, I mean, now is this going to be your it seems like it is your passion. So is this going to be your future, writing?
It's definitely going to be a part of my future.
Oh.
After I got the taste of, you know, publishing it and putting it all together, as much as it was hectic and nerve-wracking and I lost sleep, it was great. It's such a learning and building experience. And as soon as I published and saw it on my doorstep, I said, I want to make another one, and I want to take these characters somewhere else. And if I could, you know, really leave the reader with anything, it's that Dakota's character is very satisfied with her life before all of this craziness happened. And I think we find ourselves there a lot. You know, we're pretty much content with where we are. And she was very much a hero beforehand. She's not, you know, the unsung hero that just find something that she really has to give up this amazing life she had and find something different and live by a new set of rules and then accept what she's lost and, you know, embrace what she's gained. And it's a whole journey, both emotional and psychological and in real life, that she has to take that we all kind of do. And I really wanted that to be the takeaway and not so much just I like how you put it, that it really is a psychological horror rather than just a fantasy ride.
Yeah, that's how it seems to me. But no, I like that. I mean, that this is, like you say, we most of us at least come to some point in our life where there's a lot of changes, and the way we thought things were going sort of stopped. I mean, we pushed on, or we choose to go a different path. And so it's a whole new experience, and we need new tools to make it through.
Definitely. So. And just because it's something different and not expected doesn't mean it's not as fulfilling and exciting and as much yours as the life that kind of was convenient for either you or the character or whoever you want to apply it to.
Yeah. Well, what advice would you have for people who think that they may have a good story or a book or something? What would you tell them to do? How should they pursue that?
As I guess easily but as bluntly say, go for it. You know, when you make that decision to take this little dream you had a couple years ago that you just dabbled on and say, you know what, I'm going to do this. It's going to be a book, and I'm going to put it out there for everyone to read, which was such a big thing for me because I was always so self-conscious about people reading my creative writing. But it's an amazing experience to have with yourself and then also being able to share that with other people, because even if you don't have those real ties like I had in my book with, you know, the fire department or riding horses in the equestrian world, there still is so much of every author in every book, which I love. I love reading, and I love finding that in books, you know, what really is part of the author in here. And you really just have to sit down and make yourself write and put it all together and cross every T, dot every I, at the same time make sure all the characters are happy and fleshed out and know each other. And it's so great. I love it. I think it's such a growing experience, and a growing experience has been an amazing accomplishment at the same time.
Right. Okay. Right. It's a win-win because you're learning more about yourself and you're getting things out, and then it's something that other people can enjoy and learn from also. So there's not a downside to it. Maybe the downside is lack of sleep, maybe. Okay. But other than that, it seems like it's pretty much all good.
And I couldn't have been happier with how the ending turned, or with the, you know, the a friend of mine from the equestrian club at my university posed for the cover with her horse, and then a friend of mine, Eric, did the cover, and another friend of mine, Katie, read the book and really, so it just, it really embraced my life at the end. With it couldn't have gone any better than that.
Right. I mean, it tightened your support system, actually.
Yes.
Bonding with your friends.
And sitting alone writing and bringing this all out was at times isolating, you know, to force yourself to sit down and to expose all of these feelings. So that sometimes was very alone and lonely. But then for the ending, that I found all these people that had been there this whole time in my real life that helped me put it on the publishing block and got it all done. And then when that was over, I was much more appreciative of everyone that was now in my life and had already been in my life. And I have to mention my dad, because he's always been my biggest cheerleader.
Your dad's always been there for you.
Yeah.
Your dad's always, he, way back, I mean, when you were doing your traveling and the activism and all, he was there. I mean, he was terrified for you sometimes.
Yes, he was.
He really was, but he was so supportive. He has been. You've been very fortunate there, Kira. That's excellent. But well, I'm so happy for you. It was so exciting
when
I read. Oh my God, she's got it published. Yes. So.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe I didn't mention it. From everyone that helped me put the book together, now you're having me on your radio show to help promote it. So
it keeps going.
I keep finding more and more people in my life that are helping me out with this.
Well,
it's amazing.
We're cheering for
you.
So, www.kirastoico.com, from the woods. The Onyx. Yay! Thank you.
And it also has a Facebook page that's a little more comprehensive.
Right. Yes. And you're on Facebook too, but you've got the page for the book too. So
yes.
I'll post all that. Yeah. Wonderful.
Great.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much.
See you again. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. Be well.
Bye. Wow. I'm so excited because, you know, I love when people are doing new things. And this is somebody that I know. And I know her in like the other hats, an activist and traveler, and now she's got the book published. I find it exciting. But right now we're going to Tennessee. Hello, Michael. Or do we have Sarit? Who's on? Hello? Hello? Okay. I have them on, but I do not hear them. Okay, we'll play a little bit more music and see what's happening there. Okay, I think we've got back. Hello, guys. Michael?
Hello.
Hi. Okay. I didn't know what happened. You came in, I tried to answer, and you were gone a couple times. So, Michael Custer's here, and he is unhappy with our government. And when I say our government, I do not mean, I don't claim the government. Anyway, with the U.S. government.
The government we live under.
That's the one. That's the one.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, there's... Go ahead.
I look at what's going on, and you know, sometimes, because we have to live under this system, I try and look at things like, you know, maybe I'm a part of this thing, right? And so when I look at that, I'm watching these men who own businesses telling our government to not pay its bills. These are men that would sue you or I for not paying our bills, or evict us from our homes for not paying our bills. And I'm astonished at, one, their hypocrisy, and two, their utter ignorance.
I just read that something talking about the ignorance of the people that we the people have elected, and it's frightening. And it's a pure case of money talks. It's how they get in, and they are not bright people, many of them. Like you said, they are ignorant, and if their staff people aren't on top of things, there's no hope.
Well, bear in mind the word ignorance. It doesn't mean dumb or not bright.
No,
it simply means ignoring the facts.
Well, that's it. They ignore. They just don't know. They don't care to know. They haven't checked the facts.
I think it comes down to their plan is to destroy. I mean, look, for all of the problems that I have with Obama, he is still this nation's first black president. Now, and his existence infuriates those people to the point that they are willing to destroy their own government.
You think this is all racially based?
I do. I actually do. You know, because if we look at the policies of this president and we compare them, say, to the policies of a Ronald Reagan or a George Bush Sr., they're not all that different. In fact, by many accounts, he is more conservative than Ronald Reagan was.
Well, this is the thing. This is why I resent it. Being a socialist / communist myself, I really hate it when people say Obama's a socialist. He is anything but. And
oh,
no,
I hate it when they say he's a liberal.
I know.
Because,
well,
we haven't had a liberal since Jimmy Carter, if he could have been called a liberal at the time.
Well, now we could, compared to what... Yeah. No, I split the Unit Party pretty much now because I don't see too much difference in them.
It's not a uniparty, really and truly. I mean, there is a big difference between...
There's a few differences, yeah.
The Republicans and the current Democrats. Although, what has happened is that the Democrats have become left of center, or I'm sorry, right of center.
Yeah, yeah.
And the right wing then, in order to maintain its right of whatever the Democrats are, must be an extreme right wing.
They fell on the right-hand side, actually. They had to, because the Democrats are moving so far right. Yeah.
Right. And so they have successfully killed the liberal wing of this government, if indeed there ever was one.
Yeah, I think that there had been at some point. I think way back, I'm not sure when, but I think there was. No, you're right, though. They successfully killed it.
I can't think of a time that's documented in history where there were truly liberal factions in government or that controlled government for any length of time. That's not to say that the people haven't been able to wrest or drag liberal positions out of government. You know what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying?
Yeah.
But if we go back and we look at the Constitution of this country, which we claim to hold on to so tightly. I mean, it was written by slave owners.
Right. White, wealthy men.
Right. If you didn't own land, and you weren't white, and you didn't have a penis, you didn't have a vote.
That's right.
And everything in it seems to really favor protection of property rights over human rights every time.
Yeah.
But in looking at this coming fiscal cliff thing, it just astounds me that bankers and doctors and veterinarians, I think one of them is, you know, business owners, would dare to suggest that it's a good idea not to pay the bills that you've already racked up.
Right.
You know, I mean, it can't be that they have any serious demands because we haven't heard any.
Yeah.
So that really only leaves one thing that they could be trying to do, and that is to destroy the government as we know it. I mean, bear in mind that in the last 6 years, they have sold more AR-15s and other assorted military-style weapons to civilians than at any other time in the history of this nation. You know? So there's a whole segment of the population that has voted these people in who really believes that this government is they understand that this government doesn't have their best interests at heart.
Right. But they, because of the way things are for third parties, they don't have the money, and they're, you know, a lot of people this last election, I'm sure you heard it, people were just saying, well, you know, I can't stand Obama either, but he's the lesser of the two evils. And that's how he got in. Because, I mean, most people were not, there's still a few Obama bots around, but most people actually realized what a liar he was, and they didn't expect anything different. They just thought that what's his name was worse.
Yeah.
And it's so sad that I can never remember in my lifetime when it seemed like there was really the idea of voting for someone didn't enter in. It was always voting against someone who we thought was worse.
Well,
and I think that's so sad.
I will have to admit that the first time I voted for Barack Obama, I was not voting for the lesser of two evils. I was voting for the first black president in American history. And I would do it again.
I'm from Illinois. I know he's a liar. I knew he was a mess. And I cried and cried, but I couldn't vote for McCain either. So
we can't say that everyone from the state of Illinois is a liar now.
Well, no, I'm not a liar. But no, I'm saying I'm from Illinois. I know because he was from here.
Right. Okay.
Senator from Illinois. And I knew he was a mess. But
one thing
to
bear in mind is, you know, this faction of people, of the representatives in our government today that are hell-bent on closing the government down and going over the fiscal cliff,
What are they going to get out of it? Though, Michael, what do they plan on getting out of it?
The destruction of the government.
I mean, do you agree then with people who say that we have a fascist government?
These are men who are quoted as saying, slaves didn't have it so bad. That's the kind of people we're talking about, okay? We're talking about people who think that it is...
Are we living under a fascist government?
Huh?
Are we living under a fascist government? Because I hear this a lot.
You know, I don't think we're quite there yet.
Are we on our way at this point?
I think if they had their way, we would be, because then they would get the people to rise up with guns, okay? And I think that's what they want. They want an armed insurrection against this government. And the reasons are, hey, slavery's not such a bad idea. Let's lock up criminals and make them do work, you know?
They're doing that. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Well, these are the people that support those ideas, you know? The Alec and the Koch brother people, right?
Right.
I mean, that's who's funding them. And it's those ideals they embrace, you know? I mean, these people want armed revolution in the streets. But it ain't the right kind. One of my blogs, Revolution in the Tree, asks the question, you know, I hear people talking about revolution all the time, but as you listen a little closer to these different voices hollering for revolution, I have to stop and ask, well, what kind of revolution are you talking about, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, what is it that you're looking for in a revolution? And because we saw what happened, for instance, in Egypt, where everyone talked with the same voice until after the revolution was over. And then you had a departure from a movement towards greater civil rights and human rights for all people in a secular manner. So the voice of the people got taken over by an extremist voice. And that happens all too often in revolutions, especially when they become armed, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
yep.
Let's look at Syria. The first giant protests in the streets were all nonviolent, and they were all asking for what I would ask for, you know. But they were taken over by violent extremists of various stripes, you know.
And supported by various countries, yeah.
You know, and I can't think of any country, save maybe Iceland, that has had a successful revolution. And I think the jury's still out on Iceland, as I hear they are getting a little bit more conservative very quickly. You know?
That's sad. I mean, it's still a remarkable feat, but. It does seem like it's changing a little bit up there.
Yeah. Well, and it makes sense, too, because you've got this little bitty, tiny, lone country, basically isolated from the rest of the world, certainly isolated economically, as far as the EU is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't be the wide-open place that they were, which is sad. And I don't know how we overcome those things yet. You know?
Yeah, I know.
I know that we have to figure out a way to. But I do know for me here, when I see these people, these Tea Party types, talking about revolution, waving their guns and taking their guns to city hall meetings, I start to think, well, damn, you know, maybe this government isn't as bad as we think it is. and I say that because I look at them, and what would they do if they had the power?
Mm.
And I kind of come to a realization, too, that, you know, if I were the president today, I would go ahead and grow me a little bit extra set. I mean, I realize he just recently grew him a set and is standing against including any other issues along with the clean CR and the clean debt ceiling thing, right? That's new for this president to stand up. But I would go a little bit farther, and if they actually go over the debt ceiling, I would issue national security arrest warrants for these guys that took us over the edge, and I would detain them. I would ship them down to Guantanamo. And I would hold them there without a lawyer. I would use those laws against them because they are truly terrorists. I mean, they don't care. Their goal is the destruction of this country. They are a threat to national security. Now, I know that sounds really harsh and strange coming from me, right? You know? But think about it, you know? If there was anything that these laws were designed to do, It is to protect us from people like them.
Well,
people who would bring their guns to public meetings. You know?
See, I don't mind the guns in public meetings. I spent a lot of time in the West, and like I tell people, I felt safer out there. That was the safest part of my life, except when I was a child, you know, with my parents. But when people had guns, they carried guns. All the pickup trucks had shotguns and rifles, and I felt fine. I'm much more afraid of these people that have been elected into office because they seem like they're almost soulless in areas. I'm not going to say that they are totally soulless. I know they have families who love everything, but they do seem that they're verging on that,
yeah.
And they frighten
me. I do understand, you know, the interior, the western middle of the United States grew up with its guns, right?
Yeah,
there's a different mentality just in holding a gun even there.
Yeah.
There's an understanding that a projectile comes out of the end and it kills whatever it hits. And
right.
So maybe we better be more careful with it, you know. And I also understand, you know, rattlesnakes and bears and coyotes, and you got to protect the cattle, right? You know, I get that. but here where I'm from in the South, guns are usually being held by the crazy racist people who will kill you because your friend was black, or by crazy criminal people who will kill you because you got 25 cents in your pocket.
Yeah.
Or by crazy law enforcement people who will kill you just because they can.
That's the part. The crazy law enforcement people, I mean, we've been seeing more and more of what they're capable of, and nothing happens to them.
Well, if you put yourself in the position of a person who has agreed to go and face the worst elements in society,
that's a scary job.
It's a very scary job. And as those elements get worse and worse, particularly during times of economic crisis, high unemployment and starvation and things like that, homelessness that we're seeing, people being kicked out of their homes, many for the first time in the history of their families, you know, it makes people crazy. And imagine being a police officer and you're sent to go to a domestic squabble where there's purported to have been a gun.
Police never like domestic calls, and I don't blame them because the people are really flaky. I'd rather they would take on armed robbers who are experienced than a domestic.
I mean, and so I have some sympathies for police, and maybe that comes because I live here in Nashville where the police are not quite as crazy as we've seen in like Oakland or New York or even down the road from here, you know. I mean, the police seem pretty civil. I don't like to leave the city because I'm afraid of the police outside of the city. But, you know, I kind of understand their dilemma. They're charged with facing the worst in society. And anytime you give a bunch of people guns and charge them with facing the worst in society, when they are afraid that they are facing the worst in society, they're going to overreact a lot. And it's a terrible thing. It's a terrible tragedy. And I don't know any way to stop that from happening other than to make society a little better for them to deal with in the first place, which
That would be a good beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, imagine being a policeman in Chicago right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Having to work under Ron Emanuel, please. That would be a nightmare, I think.
Forget Ron Emanuel. Think about the 17 shootings that happen on a daily basis.
I've had wonderful experiences with the Chicago cops. I can't fault them. Me personally, When I would call and ask for help and need help, man, they were there. They always
and
came
I,
through. So.
And I think a lot of us find that in our hometowns, you know?
Hmm.
It's when we're not from there that we're a little scared. And,
yeah,
police being attacked dogs smell fear.
Exactly. Right. Right. I mean, like nobody came, you know, after me. It was me calling the police because I needed help, and they were always there for me. But yeah, it's. I think the Chicago police are just working under dreadful pressure, and you know, Chicago just became the number one in the country for murders. There were over 500 murders in 2012. They beat New York out, and
yeah.
New York. Three times the size of Chicago. So,
right, exactly. And that's why I was saying, you know, imagine being a police officer in
yeah.
Chicago. You know, I bet when you arrive on the scene, you're ready to be shot. And if you arrive on the scene ready to be shot, that means you're ready to shoot.
Exactly.
And,
the way
you
it
know,
works.
It's best just not to have any dealings if you can.
Yeah. Michael, before you go, tell me, what do you think right now is the best, most most important, most powerful thing that we can do to fight what we have in Washington?
Well, I think the first thing really we have to do is to identify which parts of Washington we really need to fight.
Okay, good point.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It's like I said, our president has a lot of shortcomings, and many of our senators and congresspeople do too. But there is one faction in government right now that actually threatens our existence, our everyday existence. And I think we have to squish them before we can go any farther.
So how do we do that? Are you talking about waiting for the polls to come up, or, I mean, is that what we have to do? Or start getting word out to people? I mean, one-on-one, talk to your neighbors, talk to people so that when election time does come around again, those people
I think
are,
that's important.
Yeah?
I think that's important. And I hate to say, if you have to vote for the lesser of two evils, but, I mean, when you're talking about survival, sometimes that's what we got to do. I do think that there should always be a third party running that offers a true ideal of what it is that we're looking for.
We can't do that until the Electoral College is gone and until they stop allowing this big funding. Because two big parties have money. They'll get money from, you know, the corporations, of course.
Yeah. Well, we found out in the last elections that big money doesn't always win. Actually, we found it out in two elections, you know.
I think Obama it wins. I think that president is selected, and a lot of times you find the same corporations were paying both.
Absolutely.
You know, to both. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that
you know,
tells you about morals and loyalty and all of that. There is none. So talk to your people. Now, you're involved. You were one of the founders of Occupy Nashville. And so, don't tell anybody, sorry.
I'm currently involved in a lawsuit against the state of Tennessee about that. So.
Oh, okay. So we'll just... But you,
I was an eager participant.
Well, you got much more involved in the political scene because of that. And I think that's a good thing. I think a lot of people were empowered by Occupy. And I'm looking to people who got involved to, you know, keep doing things. I mean, whether they're doing neighborhood meetings or going down to the whatchamacallit, like the council meetings or whatever. And then the talking to people one-on-one, I think it is important.
I think talking with people one-on-one is probably the very most important thing. You know, usually when there's a big crowd of people that come to hear somebody like you or I speak, they don't come because they're opposed to us. They come because they agree with us
already.
That one-on-one conversation that you're having when you're standing in line at to pay your phone bill or your electric bill, or when you're out at the restaurant or the bar, or you know, wherever it is that you go in your everyday life, you know, just always expressing more serious issues, addressing serious issues in everyday conversation, I think is very important. Of course, it won't make you a whole bunch of friends.
Well, that's okay, because you still have the choir that you preach to the rest of the time, that the ones who are on your side. So
it's easy to alienate them too, though.
Yes. But thank you, Michael Custer from Nashville, and good luck in your lawsuit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, it's out of my hands. I just stand by and watch. But hoping that.
Well, I was going to say, on Facebook, An American Alarm Clock, and your blog is?
An American Alarm Clock at blogspot.com.
Blogspot.com, okay.
Yeah.
That's it. So you can get much more there.
A lot more in depth. You can really find out what I think about things, for whatever that's worth.
No. You've thought things out a lot, and that's good. I mean, you're not just talking out of your posterior. So, thank you, Michael, very much, and hope you'll come back. Okay, bye bye.
Here's Sarita, I think.
And Sarita's here. Okay, yes, same phone number. Sarita Jacobson's here with her eye on Israel, and yes, we must say Michael and Sarita are married, so that's why it was a handover for the phone. Hi, Sarah.
Yeah. Hi. How are you doing? I got a glimpse of hope from Israel. Some glimpses of hope from Israel.
Okay, you were breaking up just a tiny bit.
Can you hear me well?
Now it's better. You're much better now.
I don't know where to start. There's so much going on. So I'll just start by telling what I was doing the other day. I was surfing YouTube again, and I see this thing. You know, I read Hebrew. For those who don't know, I read very good Hebrew. And I see this title to a video called, A Lefty is Harassing Our Soldiers. So I decided to open it. And what do I see in it? Our friend Guy Butavia, who was on the show, is trying to talk the soldiers into being humane. And a bunch of right-wingers put it into a video and are talking about killing him and hurting him in the video. It's very disturbing. Underneath the video, the YouTube comments.
Oh.
I think that shows a lot about what's going on in Israel, just reading those comments.
What were they? Were they supporting the
first comment? They're talking about our friend Guy Butavia, who is a peace activist. For those who don't know, he's a very courageous peace activist.
Yes.
First comment: he is insane. I hope he gets better fast. He is the second comment. I'm reading them right now. That's from a day ago. He's cursing him, a weird Jewish curse, and then he's saying worse than Arabs. Then the third one, I don't even know if I can say it, but they like, the Israelis are very harsh sexually. So the third one saying that he has a voice of someone who sucks. Then here they're calling him son of a whore, maniac. We hope he will disappear from Israel. God save us from traitors like him. And our amazing soldiers, there's nothing like you. We salute you. I'm still reading.
Two weeks ago,
there is so much land. Why can't we bury him there? Stinky person. I would bite him on the neck and pull out his vocal cords. Oh, my God, this is getting hard to read. Another comment about Israeli peace activist. What kind of disgusting person? And then that dumb person is commenting, curses him in Arabic. and talks about castrating him and others like him and throw us to the sea.
My God.
I mean, I've never seen such hate. No, that's why I call them Nazis. This is a Nazi mentality. I'm warning the world. It's very scary.
Yeah, no, that is, that's just going beyond whatever. I mean, it's like they were trying to outdo each other with the comments. And we know, like you said, you know him personally, and we've had him on the show and everything. I mean, what a wonderful, peace-loving person, and trying to, oh, my God. Okay, so they called him. And
this is just the beginning of the comments. I was so upset seeing it, I couldn't continue to read, because we all love Guy. He's a great person.
Right. Wow.
And inspiring.
Well,
and he's very humble.
Well, these people are, I mean, they're so brainwashed.
Yeah, it's very, very easy to brainwash people that have no access to any media but something like Fox News.
Right, because, that's it. The Israeli people, as a rule, they have something like Fox. And so we know how ridiculous Fox is. So they believe that stuff. And if they don't have anybody around to, you know, tell them the truth, they're going to make comments like that. That's horrid.
Isn't it crazy? Because
we know how peaceful he is, and to have these ignorant people saying things like that.
The comment from 3 weeks ago says we have to burn all the left-wingers.
Ooh.
It's a woman, too. Very scary.
That is scary. That's
so, there's more. They're saying left wing is cancer. Cancer of Israel. And we have to erase it from the face of the earth. Left wing are disgusting. This person, they're talking about his ass now. They're really sexually harassing him too, the boys and the girls too.
Oh.
And they're making fun of him for telling the soldier they're on private Palestinian land. They're saying there's no such thing. They're calling him transgender. I didn't know that is an offense, to be transgender. So they're so bad.
Well, that's not a bad thing in the first place, but I mean that's just stupid.
Yeah, isn't it? They're hoping he will not multiply. We will multiply. They're in trouble.
Yeah. Well. Oh. No, they do stuff like that. They badmouth a person who's only for peace, and then they go out and do things. I just saw that a family that had been thrown out of their house. They were living in a cave.
And now
they've been told they have to get out of the cave, for God's sake. What is
that
about?
Insane. So. Yeah, and you know, the people that they call it price tag. The settlers, they don't call their attacks terrorism. They call it price tag, but it's really terrorism. They terrorize the Palestinians that live out on the West Bank very much. And guess what? One of them that shot that kid in the eye, they don't even get punished. Their punishments they get is a joke, like cleaning the police yard or going to jail for a week.
Can you imagine? I mean, he blinded the kid. Okay, cleaning the police yard. That's punishment.
Yeah.
But man, you shoot a rocket that fizzles into Israel, actually stolen Palestinian land, and then they're all up in arms, I mean, saying something comes from Gaza, and then they're over Gaza like, you know, white on our eyes. I mean, they're just over, right there. There they are with their drones flying all the time, and, you know, anything, but yet they can shoot a kid and blind him, and that's okay. Yeah, oh well.
So, the good Israelis really don't know what to do right now because they're hardly a majority, and they're all afraid of this kind of violence from the right wing more than I didn't realize it's that bad. They were always trying to tell me, but now I see it, I believe. It's hard to believe until you see.
Yeah, okay, right. Because, like you said, you just couldn't imagine that it would be that bad?
Absolutely. Who can imagine? When I tell people here the terror the Palestinians have to live under, they sometimes end up in tears. It's really, I have Americans who know nothing about politics come to my house. I show them the videos that my friend shoots there, Guy, and they leave my house. They leave my house in tears more than once or twice.
That's good. No, that's good because it gets people thinking. They see what's going on. They see where American tax money goes because we have to, you know, we have to mention that America pays Israel $3 billion a year, and this is
minimum.
Yeah,
I have a feeling it's more than that.
Yeah, I think it is, but that's what that one lump thing that 10-year thing that pact that they made way back, it was going to be $30 billion over the next 10 years, and already it doesn't expire till I think it's 2007. I mean 2017. I could be wrong. It might expire before that. The 10 years might be up, but Netanyahu has already been begging for more. He wants more than that in this next thing. So
Netanyahu loves capitalism. He brought capitalism to Israel. Soon they will not have any health care left. They want to privatize schools there. And
Fred said the people that we have a few people who were old enough to be Holocaust survivors, and they're eating from the garbage.
Yes, they are. And they're not getting their compensation money from Germany. Instead, Israel is putting it in their pocket, somebody.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what they are doing to combat it, they have an organization of families that lost a member through terrorism from both sides get together and become friends.
Oh, God. See, that's what it just makes me cry, because just like that hand in hand that you talked about the other day, and you know, where the kids are learning together, and now, people who have lost on both sides, so they know the pain, and they don't want other families to go through this.
Exactly. So this person from Beit Omar near Hebron, a Palestinian, said their son was killed 5 years ago when he was in high school, when he was only 18. His name was Mahmoud, and it was a symbol of all that was happy in life. Suddenly I lost him, suffered so much misery after my son was killed. I hated Jews. Years after his death, I met an Israeli, Robbie Damelian. I met Ruby, and she told me her story. Oh, it's a lady. I told her mine, invited me to be part of the Bereaved Family Forum, Israeli-Palestinian Conflict, where I knew that the Jewish people, both beautiful people, so it's translated from Hebrew. So there is a lot of movement to combat this hate. They're very small but cute and beautiful and give hope.
Well, we concentrate on that there are people who see how evil and just dreadful it is, whichever side. I mean, nobody wants, I mean, there's been a lot more Palestinians killed, we know. But, I mean, there were, at one time, there were, you know, a few of those Palestinian, what do they call them? Well, it's like the bombers that would come in and, you know, bomb something, and several people would be killed, the kids and all. So, people on both sides lost people, although the toll was much greater on the Palestinian side.
Much, much greater. I'm worried about Gaza, actually, because their situation is getting worse and worse. And now Egypt closed their borders, and they have no clean water. Many of them are getting water illnesses. They have nowhere for the rainwater to go, so every time it rains, it floods because they can't fix their infrastructure. and the sewer floods.
The hospitals, because of the tunnels closing, the hospitals aren't getting supplies. So they can't help the people when all this you isn't it cholera you can get from bad water?
Oh yeah.
So I'm scared to death about that too. Like you said, there's no place for it to go when the rains. I don't know.
So the Gaza youth breaks out, people are very worried about it. They are saying that winter is coming. Gaza will turn into a huge swimming pool. Infrastructure? What is that? They don't even know what it is. Yeah, that's from Gaza Youth Breaks Out, their latest status. And as we speak, they are kicking people out of their homes and putting settlers in the homes still, as we speak, building settlements faster than anything we can imagine.
Yeah, and then they wonder why we don't want to, sit down to peace talks. Excuse me, you can't sit down to peace talks with somebody who is, still destroying your land and property.
Yeah, it's pure robbery. Robbery in daylight.
That's just, that's ridiculous. So, I'm totally with Hamas on that. It's like, no, we're not going to talk as long as they keep doing this, because obviously by doing it, they're proving that they don't want peace.
It's so true. Capitalism does not want peace. Capitalism wants to have more war. Israel profits in war. So,
yeah.
One of their number one industry is to export weapons to the United States. Also, they export, I was talking to Veterans for Peace, they export tanks to this country.
Wow. And then this country, like Caterpillar, sends bulldozers over there to kill American activists like Rachel Corrie. I mean, it's capitalism. It's the very worst face of capitalism, the war machinery. Because war makes so much money for them.
Yeah, and I hope every American checks out who Rachel Corrie is. What I think a lot of people can do to help is go talk to their local senators and ask their senators to find out who Rachel Corrie is. I actually did that here in Nashville.
That's a very good idea, because people just they don't realize. The young American woman who was there fighting and standing in front of a house that was going to be bulldozed, and this newly immigrated Russian man who was doing the bulldozing ran over her, backed up, ran over her again. And there was, proven by the pictures, there was no way he didn't see her.
Yes.
So.
And she was in Palestine for a few weeks and saw people be shot and killed.
Yeah.
If she can only see that in a few weeks, I cannot imagine daily life there. I try to explain to people what daily life there, and even I cannot understand the horror. I also found out that, my best Palestinian friend just told me that his brother was in Israeli jail for a long time.
Hmm.
For no reason.
Yeah, what did they say? 4,000 Palestinians in Israeli jails right now? Is that right, Sarit, or do I have my numbers all messed up?
The numbers?
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know. I know it's...
I don't know. I mean, I can't say I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. But like you said, for no reason. I mean, they just put them in. And they jail youngsters. I mean, recently they had a 5- and 7-year-old in jail without seeing their parents, for heaven's sake.
Could you imagine?
Just taking your baby out and throwing him in an Israeli jail? And then when the kids come out, they have those horrible stories about the electrical prods and things?
That's just unbelievable, and it happens every day.
Yeah. Yeah, because, we hear about it more than, obviously, more than the just your regular person in America who's watching Fox TV again, but I mean, there's a lot that we don't hear about also, because there's a lot that's going on in areas where they really, they don't have the phones and the internet and stuff.
Absolutely.
And so, I mean, we're only getting a portion of it, and we're so appalled and crying. And then in Gaza, like you were talking about the water, the medical situation, the electricity. I mean,
yeah.
Again, yeah. If you're lucky, you've got 8 hours a day.
Yeah, I think less, two or three.
Yeah, it's because there's only one power plant, and
yeah.
Israel controls it. And then the people using those generators and breathing those fumes. That's just, and the date harvest has started, though.
Some Israelis really get pissed off, but I call Gaza a concentration camp, and I call the jail where they keep the Palestinian children is called Ofer. I call Ofer a concentration camp too.
It is.
And I lost a few friends because of it. Unbelievable that they couldn't see it.
I mean, they thought it was okay to jail these little kids and 12, I mean, not just the 5 and 7, that's not, but...
Like, oh, they didn't believe that. They said I was lying.
Oh, okay.
I'm always lying when I talk. They never believe half of what I say.
It's painful for them to, I mean, if they believed it, then they'd have to do something, Sarit.
Absolutely. I had one Israeli that I almost managed to explain. He even watched a movie about Rachel Corrie, and I could feel that he was crying because we were chatting. And then the next day he blocked me.
Wow.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Okay, some people aren't ready. They're so far in denial. Wow.
So you need more activists.
Yes.
I know a few people from Gaza right now. It looks like they are really depressed from the situation, poverty, having not enough food.
Yeah.
And PTSD is a big problem, because every time there's a drone over the house, like every other day, it reminds them of the wars they had to go through.
Sure. It's a miracle to me how the people just, the young people just keep studying and studying. I mean, they do so well in school. And how can you study when you've got the drones overhead? You barely have electricity. You don't have like refrigeration for your food, and you may not even have enough food, and the water's dirty. And yet the surprising part is that more people aren't depressed than are. I mean, but I think, what, did you tell me or did I read it? I mean, the percentage of people in Gaza suffering from depression is so high.
Oh, yeah. They had a few cases of self-immolation in Gaza.
Oh.
And that never made it to mainstream media.
No.
And hardly related to the alternative media as well.
No.
That a young man lit himself in fire on Gaza, and he didn't want to be a burden, so he did it outside the morgue.
Oh. That's just...
So they had to just pick his body and put it back in the morgue.
Oh, my God.
And when we have self-immolation in Israel, I think it's for the same reasons. We had 5 or 6 in Israel, too, and I think a lot of the people in Israel are hurting for what's happening in Gaza.
Right.
It's very heartbreaking. So they're waiting for the Messiah in Israel, the right-wingers.
Right.
They believe that's what's going to bring peace, and resurrection of the Messiah is going to solve all their problems.
Isn't that funny? They're waiting for the Messiah to come and bring peace, but yet, while they wait, they're going to cause as much war and destruction and damage as they can.
Oh, yeah, because I believe that is what's going to bring the Messiah, war and destruction.
Okay, so that...
The settlers believe that if they kick out all the Palestinians, then the Messiah will come.
These people, I mean, delusions, yeah, it's not a strong enough word.
Yeah, any psychiatrist would say that those are very sick people.
Yeah, any kind of a religion that teaches or encourages any type of war is a false religion, in my opinion. That's my opinion. But because religion is supposed to be based on peace and love and compassion.
Yes, and even the Jewish religion.
Yeah, I know they're not following the real. Yeah, I know. The problem is that it's not just them that are affected by what they do, but totally innocent people are affected.
And the Bedouin are also suffering. The Bedouin are, their homes are being destroyed. And with the Bedouin, there's no excuse. No Bedouin ever fought back the Israeli government. And they even arrested the Bedouin leader today.
Oh, I did not know. Oh.
And remember Tamar, the Israeli lady that we spoke to on the show a few months ago?
Yeah.
They arrested her, too, just for a few hours. And let me tell you about her arrest. They arrested her because she was protected. She went, there's African refugees in Israel that are put in concentration camps, too, horrible prisons.
Right.
And she went to protest it and got arrested. So they took her to police investigation, and she said, you let 1 million Russians into Israel, and you know half of them are not Jews. So why do you care when a few thousand Africans come to Israel? Are you that racist? And they didn't know what to say to her. There was silence in the police. And then one of the police women said, oh, I'm not Jewish. So I think that's kind of funny.
Oh, my goodness. No, I did not know she was arrested. Okay, well, good for her. I mean, I really admire her because she speaks out.
Me too.
Yeah, her and then her and that those grannies that sing.
It's beautiful.
Yes. It's like, okay. So we know that there's people in Israel that are fighting the good fight too.
Being
arrested for it. And then poor guy having to have that stuff said about him. Sometimes doing the right thing is very painful.
Yes. Amnon Kabuli is saying that the Israelis are very sick right now. The Israeli society is very ill. because people from Israel that are saying that the Israeli society is ill, that is an alarm.
Wow. Well, they're right. I think that our society is pretty ill. I mean, I think the society in general is pretty ill, but
it is.
Than others, but it's, I don't know. Sarita, so good to have you back. Now it seems like our technical problems are all taken care of, so we're good to go. So we'll see you back next Wednesday.
Great. I'll see you then.
Right. Okay.
Take care.
Good night. Thank you so much.
A pleasure. Good night.
Good night.